Alrighty, we are back. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Prokoski. Bill Newell helping out, as he always does. And we have some stuff to talk about this evening. Lots of sports to throw back and forth. Our special guests, well, we have a lot of special, the usual special guests. Let me put it that way. Where's the button for the music? There it is. Kill that. We'll be chatting with our usual guys, Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and, of course, Mike Grenier, sports writer as well. Also going to be checking in with John Pinchon, and he is the boys' lacrosse coach at St. John's Prep High School. I want to say hi to Bob. I want to say hi to a few people. Hold on here. Let's say hi to Coach Kearns here first. Tim, you there?
Yes, Rick.
Okay. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for asking.
Say again? Thanks for asking.
Thanks.
Okay. Bob Boyce got a hold of us tonight, Coach, and good to talk with Coach Boyce.
That's funny. You try saying that because I was talking to Larry Gentile, the Gloucester baseball coach, and we were talking about the upcoming Danvers game, and Bob's name raced through my mind, and I'm thinking, geez, I wonder what he's doing now.
Well, Bob actually texted us, and he wanted to tell us that Coach Goodhue was under the weather right now a little bit. Coach Goodhue apparently recovering from some kind of malady or another somewhere. And Ben, we want to say hi to you because Ben always promotes us. He always promotes the North Shore Sports Desk on North Shore 104.9 on Saturday mornings with Nick and Nick, a couple of Gloucester guys, and Ben, I don't know what's going on, but, you know, Coach Kearns and I and Bill and everybody, we hope that this is just a minor little setback here, and hope that you're going to be back out there soon. Of course, anybody doesn't know, Ben Goodhue works at Beverly High School, teacher at Beverly High School for many years, has coached at Beverly High School, has coached at Marblehead High School, has coached at Gloucester High School, and a former student of mine. I don't think you had Ben in class, did you, Tim?
No, he was a little bit, just a couple years before my time. He played football in the 80s.
Okay, so what are you saying?
I'm not quite that old.
Well, that's
right. I came to Gloucester in 96.
Okay, all right. Well, anyway, Ben, hope you're well, brother, and thanks for all the support that you give us and everybody else as well, too. Very positive man, good coach, good guy, good teacher. And Bob Boyce, thank you for checking in as well. We're going to talk with Bob at some point and just see what he's doing. Former assistant baseball coach at Danvers High School. Trying to get a hold
of...
Pardon me?
Long time.
Oh, yeah. Also would hope to talk with Roger Day, one of the all-time incredible head coaches and assistant coaches on the North Shore in football and in baseball. Over 500 wins in baseball. I don't know how many wins he's been involved in football, but... hope that we can chat with Roger. And we'll be getting back with Paul Ingram, too. Paul, of course, another Hall of Fame football coach who works with us as a football analyst. We did not get to broadcast any of the Fall 2 games, but we will. We're already getting ready, Tim, for, I don't know about you, but we're getting ready for September, man. This is going to be some spectacular year.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I got some of the games. I got to a couple of Duke Gloucester games. Beverly games and of course Revere games when they went into their abbreviated season. So I got to do some miles around the North Shore, but you know, not broadcasting kind of really stinks. I got to say that.
Yeah, I agree, man, and that's our fun. But I also want to point out, and I want to thank the coaches who have been so responsive, Tim. Every single coach we've reached out to in the last couple of months, since Fall 2 actually got underway, and I actually got off my butt and started making the calls, every single coach has responded and talked about his kids or her kids in such a positive way that coming out of this pandemic has been an absolute joy in how they've handled it, the parents have handled it, but especially how the kids have handled it. But I want to thank all the coaches and athletic directors across the board who've been so helpful with us, Tim. It's been amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the most unusual year, and you know, for them to have some kind of normalcy coming on our show, you know, and talking to you or me and posting interviews, added an element of normalcy to the year. You know, they may not have been able to play games or they had to play a different schedule of games. And it at least it put them back on the track of, you know, a regular schedule. So that, I think in a way we kind of helped them normalize a very abnormal season.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm so happy we're beginning to slowly ascend from this thing, from the depths, and it's been good. Coach, before we check in with Coach Pinchon in a few minutes here, what comes to your mind in terms of sports?
Amazed that the Red Sox are still at the best record in baseball.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, the dramatic continual underachievement of the Boston Celtics.
Well, have you read the latest on Jason Tatum?
No, now what?
He's out. He's out for the rest of the season. I just read.
From the
Jaylen Brown. Excuse me, not Jason Tatum. I beg your pardon, Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
Torn wrist ligament, gone for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's not a good thing when you know it's been as crazy a season as it has for them to lose. You know, one of the two bright sides in the NBA certainly won't improve their chances as they move towards the postseason and probably having to do a play-in game, once the playoffs do start, if they even make the playoffs.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So, and the team that's, you know, the Red Sox are hot, the, Celtics are ice cold, and the team that's just moving right along, I barely noticed it except for the legion of true blue, fans is the Boston Bruins.
True black and gold fans.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
It's unbelievable.
You're right. And they're doing it.
We're talking about the Bruins.
They're doing it methodically and quietly, not spectacularly, but steady. They have a setback every now and then, but in general, they're winning, you know, 7 out of 9 games, that kind of thing, and they keep moving on. So, and they're developing some interesting chemistry, I think. All right, we'll talk about that stuff and more. We want to take a break and come back with St. John's Prep. St. John's Prep Lacrosse in just a minute. John Pinchon, you're listening to MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, again our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and it is great to be with you on this here Monday evening. We'll be back. All right, we're back live, and I do not know what's going on with this drive, the drive that has all of our commercials on, it has our spots, and all of a sudden, and all of our interviews, it just all of a sudden just passed away, and it is not lighting up, it's not catching fire or anything. So let me try. I'm going to go over here to this other computer for a second, Coach. Maybe you can sing a song or do a tap dancing lesson or something. Okay, it works in that drive over there. So let's bring it back to this drive and see what the story is. Binga, binga, binga. It's not working in this drive either. I've got 4 ports, and it's not working. So stay with us here, audience, as I do some technical moving around. Go to that port, and again, nothing. And so I'm guessing that maybe the computer port itself is gonzo. And that's going to present a problem for our advertisers, Tim. I'm not hearing any songs over there, Tim.
No, you don't want to hear me singing. Okay. But I will tell you that one of our sponsors is Big Jim's Auto Body, 19 Creek Street in Beverly. Been in Beverly for nearly 40 years. And the winner of numerous best auto body shop in the Salem Beverly area over the past 20 years, year after year. So give Big Jim, Jamie Zarella, a call at 978-927-3201. That's Big Jim's Auto Body.
Nice save. All right, so I've got it. I found a port that I think is going to work now. You can hear the little clinging there.
Well, you know what they say, Rick. Any port in a storm.
Boy, I'll tell you, man, that's cool. All right. I know, really. All right, here we go. We'll try it again. We'll be back.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our offices or call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, capeannsavings.bank.
Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Minor little glitch here as we come back. I don't have the right phone number for Coach Pinchon. So, Coach, excuse me, if you're out there, go ahead and email us, please, at msonewsports@gmail.com. The number I have, apparently, is the school number, and I need a number to catch up with you. Let me try this one once again. Let me see here. Let me see if I have it somewhere else. Try this one more time. I can't do that with Tim on the line there, so let me scratch that. Dadgummit. That's my number. And let me try this one more time. Tim, you don't have Coach Pinchon's number, do you?
I do not.
I didn't think you did. All right. Well, you know, there are hills and there are valleys, right?
Exactly.
Oh, man. And this one is most interesting here. John used to coach at Beverly, right?
Yes, he was. Long time.
All right. Let me see if I can go over there and grab that number. Maybe I have that there if I can. Oh, my goodness. This is so tiny. Let's see. Nope. Oh, there it is. Got it. But that's... Oh, got it. Hello. I think I may have it. Hold on, coach. Try it again. Be right back. Yeah. Coach, Rick Moore, MSO News Sports.
How are you?
I got your number. All right. You gave me the school number, and it took me about an hour to find your number from Beverly High School Coaches Directory. So.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
No worries. Let me bring Tim back on here. All right, Tim, I found Coach Pinchon, and he is still here. So it's great to be with you. Coach, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very well. Very well. And thank you for, hanging in there with us. Took me a while to do what I was supposed to do correctly here. Coach, want to get started here. We're talking with all the coaches this spring on the experience of being out of practice, being out of touch, being off the field officially with your kids for almost 2 years. That's where I want to start with you guys. The prep, you guys off to a 2-1 start. Is that correct?
We've only had one official game.
Okay, 1-0. Okay, fine. Finding the right standings and stuff is difficult, but I know you won your opening league game. But before we talk about that, Coach, again, tell me a little bit about the gap and the preseason and how all that is working out.
I think the gap has been a pretty big challenge just in terms of getting our, guys, our seniors and our juniors to kind of reinstall the culture and all the things that we had, built. I think when you have a year-to-year team, it kind of transitions nicely. The juniors learn from the seniors, and then they become seniors. And without having a season last year, we're asking our seniors to step up and do a lot of things that they probably are. I don't think they were aware of when they're sophomores.
Right.
A sophomore, and, yep. And you're playing varsity lacrosse as a sophomore, you're kind of just worried about one day at a time and not thinking about, carrying up the water and making sure the balls are where they need to be and all that stuff. So, I think that was a challenge because there's really no way to create that. And there's no way to prepare for it. And then I think the second part of this is just how quickly the season started. I mean, we started last, our first official day on campus practicing was a week ago Wednesday, so we were essentially at 10 days before our first game,
mm-hmm.
Which is a really quick, normally we have 10 days before our first scrimmage, so it's just a really quick turnaround, and I think we're seeing that in across the board.
I think
a lot of teams are just, it's just early season, we're still throwing the ball away, we're still making unforced turnovers and errors as we as coaches try and figure out who goes where, and the kids try and figure out where they fit, so I will say that is, I'm more than happy to deal with that so that we can play.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of has been all right, it's been a little rocky and ugly and kind of we're trying to figure it out, but we're just thrilled to be here. We're thrilled to be out there every day. We had some atrocious weather a couple days in the last 2 weeks and, it was like, oh, are we going to cancel practice? No, we're not going to cancel. We're going to go out. We're going to get wet.
Yep.
We're going to love it because we haven't been able to do it. So.
Yeah, I know. When my daughter first started playing at Gloucester High School, on the first day of practice, it was in early March, and it was 26 degrees. And I think spring lacrosse players in Massachusetts are as tough as they come for boys and girls. But, Coach, you bring out something that it's true across the board. You're working with seniors who the last time they played interscholastic varsity were sophomores without that interscholastics in between. And it's a great challenge for all of you coaches. You're all starting on the same page, and so I'm guessing you probably have to be a little creative, don't you, in trying to pack, 3 or 4 weeks of preseason into like 5 or 6 days?
Yes. We simplified a number of things that we would normally do because we knew we were going to be up against a tight schedule time-wise, and then we also thought it was a great opportunity to kind of reteach some of the cultural things that we try and install and make, we didn't really change much, but we wanted to just re-emphasize it and kind of start over, which we thought of as like the best opportunity to have, how do you make the best out of this, you know, losing a season last year? Well, let's just treat everyone as if they're new. Mm-hmm. Even though there's a few guys who played with us as sophomores, let's just start over like we're, you know, new coaches, essentially, a new program.
Wow. Okay.
That's been fun. We've enjoyed it. I think the, you know, the guys have picked up, they've been tremendous. I think the last, you know, 2 weeks have really been productive as they could be, for an early season. It's been a great preseason.
Before we get to your first game, which you guys won, and I do want to talk about that because it's huge, St. John's of Shrewsbury. I want to bring in Tim Kearns, Coach Kearns, coached baseball for a long time. Coach, you know Coach Pinchon.
Yeah, we met several times. We talked over behind high school. It's been a while. Coach, on another track, how do injuries play into the abbreviated preparation period and going into the season?
It's a great question because, one, we've never had to start a lacrosse season coming out of a football season.
Mm-hmm.
And even in a normal year where if, you know, your hockey team's really good, they might be playing, deep into the hockey playoffs. Football is just a different sport. And so we have a number of guys who are dealing with things that they, you know, through a season of football have kind of worn down and just, you know, gotten beat up a little bit. But because we started right up, there's really no time to rest and recover. And I think we've had to manage that. We've tried to limit some things about how we go about practicing, you know, reduce the number of running days and a little bit of the physicality. Because we want those guys to be able to perform, and we understand that they're going to need time to heal and get better. And then the other side of that, we had a young man, you know, suffer an injury, broke a bone in his hand. And because the season is so short, it's like, man, I feel so bad for him because he might miss the whole regular season, cause he's in a cast. And in a normal year, it'd be like, all right, well, you're out a month and you'll come back and play in May. We're already at May 10th here. So, I think you're going to see a lot of teams that don't have tremendous depth are really going to, struggle with injuries because of how short the season is.
Coach, before we get to the game, some of the details of the game against St. John's of Shrewsbury, I got to ask you about your seniors because I'm guessing they must have some varsity experience, although they might not. I don't know, but you have quite a few seniors on your squad.
Yes, we have 13.
So tell me a little bit about who you might be expecting to be leaders on the field for you, or at least if not in a game, at least in practice.
I think it starts with Michael Kelly. Michael is a senior. He's basically started for us since he was a freshman. He's just a really great athlete, tremendous kid, outstanding. He's going to play at Princeton next year, so.
Whoa. Okay.
He's all around outstanding as a young man, as a leader in the school. But he has a lot of varsity experience for us. So, Michael's, you know, kind of our number one guy. And then next up, in terms of varsity experience would be, Michael Ayers, who's also a senior leader. Michael played, for us as a sophomore, and he kind of, as the year went on, Michael got better and better, and he played more and more minutes and really, really impressed us as a sophomore. So he has that varsity experience. And then the third guy is, Graham Tyson, who took some faceoffs for us as a sophomore. So Michael Ayers is going to Tufts, and then Graham Tyson is going to Bryant. So they have the ability to play, but they also did it a little bit for us as sophomores. Beyond that, though, I mean, I am just so impressed with this entire senior class, how hard they work. Guys like, you know, guys who didn't play, like, meaningful varsity minutes as sophomores, but we knew were going to be really good. So Charlie Donnie is a midfielder. Patrick Atkins is another midfielder. Emmett Schillinger on defense. Like, these are guys who we would have had a great year last year as juniors. They would have been all over the newspapers and people talking about how good they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they get to do it, and we trust them, and they've really embraced their role as senior leaders in our program. And I told the seniors at the beginning of this our regular season last Thursday before our first game, I said I trust all 13 of them in a way that I probably have not had a senior class top to bottom that I just really trust and believe in. So
that's something.
I think the reason we have had such a productive preseason is because how bought in the senior class is. They're all outstanding.
You talk about Michael Ayers. Now tell me about Jimmy Ayers.
So Jimmy is, Jimmy was going to have a good year for us last year as a freshman. Jimmy's incredibly talented. I think he certainly has learned a lot from his older brother. They play different positions, but just about how to be a varsity athlete, how to prepare and how to compete. And, we knew that Jimmy was going to be special and he's in a great spot this year because he's surrounded by great upperclassmen who can really perform. And so Jimmy, he had a great game for us on Friday, scoring 4 goals and really, scored the first goal of the season, right off the break for us there. So yeah, Jimmy's incredibly talented. He's an outstanding, outstanding lacrosse player and, he is going to have a great, 3-year career here for us.
Yeah, let's hope, all is well. Tim, some final question for Coach Pinchon?
I had one, and I had it all set up, and then you guys kept talking.
Well, that's what we do.
I can't remember what it was. It's one of those things that comes with age, Coach,
No, it's because you're a good listener, Tim, and then that, I appreciate that, so thank you very much. But I know you got something positive to bring out here.
I can't bring it back. I apologize.
Okay. When you get it, let me know. Coach,
I'll mail it in.
Okay. Coach Pinchon, you started off with a big win over Shrewsbury. That's got to be a big win because to start that way. Now you got Malden Catholic coming up on Tuesday.
Yes. Yep.
What's the scouting report on them?
I mean, it's going to be the scouting report on all the teams this year, which is we really don't know. it's just even preparing last Friday for Shrewsbury, we really didn't know. We just don't know. It's going to be really hard to scout teams this year. And I think what we're going to see is predicting who's going to play well and who, this team should beat this team is going to be nearly impossible.
All right. Well, how many games are on the schedule right now?
We're playing 11 right now. So we're playing our 10 league games, and we picked a game up against Hingham over Memorial Day weekend, which will be a great opportunity for us to play against a great out-of-conference team.
All right, we're going to catch you in a week or two as things begin to settle in and the kids get some more experience, and we'll revisit this and see where things are.
Excellent.
Coach, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for stopping by and your patience and waiting for us to connect with you tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, John, stay safe, man.
Have a good evening.
Take care. All right, that is John Pinchon, who is the coach at St. John's Prep. He is the varsity lacrosse coach. Tim, did you hear where those kids are going? Princeton and all these other places? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know. I, yeah.
Jeez.
I mean, okay. And the thing of it is, the level of play of lacrosse at those schools like Princeton is some of the highest in the country. These kids not only are extremely smart, but they are extremely athletically gifted.
Absolutely, and I'm reading Phil Stacey's article about it, and he's quoting Coach Pinchon and saying this is one of the most gifted athletic teams he's ever had. So we're going to follow these guys and see where it goes. They were winners in their opening game, 16-5 over St. John's of Shrewsbury at Glatzfield on Friday, and they will be in action on Tuesday against Malden Catholic. We're going to take a break and get back with the action with our golf expert and sports historian Gary Larrabee along with Tim Kearns, and we'll do that in just a second. Tim, wish me luck, will you?
Listen, it almost took you as long to get a hold of Coach Pinchon as the interview went.
And you know what? It's this is... Oh, it's working now. All right. Okay. All right. Be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Right, there we go. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, and Gary Larrabee is joining us now, golf writer, sports historian, and Gary comes up with the greatest on-the-level stuff, up-to-the-date, breaking news, all that stuff last week with all the local golfers. And put you on the spot, Gary, but how you doing otherwise?
Doing wonderful. I hope you guys are as well.
We are. I don't know about Kearns. Yep.
You know why Gary is doing wonderful?
Tell me.
Because his boy won a golf tournament.
I'm listening.
Rory McIlroy, yeah.
All right.
So everything is rosy in Gary's world.
You know, Rory McIlroy, Tim, and Rick, Rory McIlroy was part of history yesterday. Do you know what type of history Rory and the other people who won their tournaments made in the world of professional big-time golf?
Oh, God, I never. For instance, 219.
Well, I know you're not going to get it, so I didn't have it until I realized it, but it was the first time, I think, ever, of the four major tours in the world, Champions, PGA Tour, European Tour, and LPGA, the first time, I think, Tim and Rick,
mm-hmm.
that the Americans were shut out.
Ooh.
Wow.
Okay.
A true international flavor to yesterday's victories. McIlroy from Northern Ireland wins by two putting the last hole from 45 feet. Ariya Jentanugarn from Thailand. She won in Thailand on the LPGA Tour.
Wow.
Alex Seja from the Czech Republic, playing only his third Champions Tour event, wins the first major of the year for the Champions, the region's tradition down in Alabama. And South African Garrick Higo won in the Canary Islands. I don't know if any birds were chirping to mark his victory, but four champions, no Americans. The only place where the Americans did win over the weekend, as Rick I know very well knows, and Tim too, was the Walker Cup, where the U.S. beat the Great Britain Island team 14-12 for the third straight win, and to increase their incredible edge in the number of victories in this wonderful match by a margin of 38-9-1, played down there at Seminole down in Florida.
How in the world, Gary? I'm astounded by that stat. And that, tell me about it. What kind of research did you have? Where'd you get that?
It was just a roundup of all the golf played over the weekend. Actually, got out of the Globe. And
that's fantastic, man. That's
guys. I think Rick, I could never remember where at least American didn't win one of the events of the weekend. But there you go. There's four.
That's amazing.
And of course, the American amateurs won the Walker Cup. But that's enough. We have some other big news from today, though, guys. Very big news. The New England PGA began their annual Pro Match Play Championship down at Kirkbray Country Club in Lincoln, Rhode Island. There's a lot of gambling going on these days, Rick and Tim, if you guys know. There is a casino down there. But this was golf, two-man golf, and Todd Scarafone from Bass Rocks and his partner have advanced to the semifinals of the New England PGA Match Play. Congratulations to Todd, teaming with Eric Barlow from Winchester Country Club, and we'll see if they can win two more matches tomorrow and win the annual New England PGA Pro Match Play.
Oh. I like it when these guys are paired up and play. And they seem to play a lot looser. Even on the Pro Tour game, they seem to play a little bit looser. You know, there's more personality demonstrated out there, which I think entertains the fans a bit more.
Yeah, it probably applies at the any PGA level as much as at the PGA Tour level, where they just had that one-time two-man team event done in New Orleans a couple weeks ago. And scores are very good. They make a lot of birdies, and it does help to have a good partner.
Yeah.
But the mere fact that we'll have a local horse in the action tomorrow down there, guys, and Todd Scarafoni, who's an outstanding player, does a lot of teaching at Bass Rocks, and I'm glad Peter Hood gave him some time off, and we'll see if he can come through tomorrow with his partner, Eric Barlow.
All right, Gary, you opened the door. Tim, hold your thought, Tim. Please don't lose it. But you opened the door with the horse comment, Gary. And what about your opinion on the Kentucky Derby winner?
You know, I am the least qualified person to comment, but, you know, Bob Baffert, the trainer, who is hopefully notching his seventh Triple Crown victory with his horse, who won this event, he's been suspended right now from training, and I guess there was a very funny explanation that trickled out of the media this afternoon in explaining why the horse, Medina something, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Had traces of this banned drug from the recent drug test they take of all these horses. The story goes like this, guys. One of the groomers of the horse, of Medina, is taking some type of very, very powerful, strong cough syrup. And for some reason, he had to do a number one in the...
Oh, boy.
Horse's stall.
Okay.
And the horse supposedly ate some of that hay, and that's how it got in the horse's system. We'll leave that for the experts. I don't believe it myself.
Okay, Gary. I'm kind of sorry I asked, but thank you, man. That's amazing.
Well, what can I say?
I know.
We didn't have too many players competing in the for a match play. Chip Johnson, formerly from Salem and Peabody, where his parents grew up, they were the number two scoring team this morning. They showed a 5-66, and Jim Antonelli, but they got beat in the first round of match play this afternoon. And the usual suspects are still alive, including former Essex assistant pro Bob Russo. They were the medalists this morning with 65. And he and his partner, Patrick Bean, they're both working on a Blackstone National out in Sutton, the course which is owned by an ex-Essex member whose name escapes me at the moment, but the golf course is owned by a local guy. And they'll be in the action tomorrow, and more action tomorrow, guys. Massachusetts Golf Association men's four-ball tournament kicks off tomorrow at Turner Hill and Ipswich Country Club. It'll switch courses and play again on Wednesday. We'll find out who will win this year's Mass Golf men's four-ball tournament.
Tim.
Ask me about Brad Stevens.
Oh, God, Brad Stevens. Look, he's going to resign.
He should be gone, yes. He should be gone. He should be gone.
Yeah. You know, I saw an article over the weekend, Gary, that talked about, you know, the very high hopes that the Celtics had. And people around the league had for the Celtics as they committed this season, you know, lacking a big man. And they got rid of Daniel Theis, which did away with one of their best rebounders. Without a plan to, you know, get another at least good big man to take up some space, Williams did a good job till he got injured, certainly. But you know, all indications of all the fingers are getting pointed at Brad Stevens for the failure of the team to get out of the gate quick, stay, get ahead of people, finish games, one thing they're not doing. And even Stevens talked about not starting games well. That's been a problem for them.
Stevens is in a world of his own. Ainge should be let go as well. And you may have heard the big bad news from today on the roster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown. So they'll be lucky to win one game in the playoffs, which would be the play-in game.
Right.
They're going nowhere fast, and we can all get excited about the Red Sox and the Patriots and maybe the Bruins.
There you go. Gary, what about the column coming up this week?
Yes, we have a column coming up this week, which did not appear last week. It's the same column talking about old man Kirk Hannafeld as he approaches the amazing age of 65 and still competing and competing very impressively against guys half his age. A couple of weeks ago in the National PGA Club Pro Championship, where Kirk was the oldest player in the field to play all 72 holes, and the only player of 12 from the New England PGA section who made the cut. So it'll be a Kirk Hannafeld column. Should be showing up, Rick and Tim, this week.
Looking forward to that, Gary, and as always, man, appreciate your stopping by with all this good stuff. And when we throw curveballs at you, you tend to really, you know, take two and hit to right. I like that.
I try my best, guys.
Thanks, Gary.
Carry on, man. Take care.
All right. That's Gary Larrabee. We do that, Tim, you know? You put those curveballs, and these guys can still hit, man. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Gary, he knows more about sports than, the old sporting news.
You know, it's weird. No, it's not weird. It's wonderful, because I feel like Billy Pilgrim, who has become unstuck in time in Slaughterhouse 5 by Kurt Vonnegut. I go back to when I talk to these guys, I almost go back to when I was 10 or 11 years old, reading the sporting news in the library in Gelnhausen, Germany, where my dad was in the Army, and reading Sport Magazine and Sports Illustrated and going through all of the Red Sox box scores, even though they were in last place forever. I listen to these guys, and it brings me back to when I was a little kid, because they just, there's Gary, Mike, and all the Salem News guys, and Nick, and Mac up in Newburyport, and Mike Alonji over at the Item. They bring you across the years, Tim, and then the young kids, like, I know when you and I were young, and Gary and Mike and those guys, when we were young, we used to read about the guys, sporting events 20 and 30 years before us. We read about Rabbit Marinville. We read about the Dean brothers, and we read about all that stuff. And these guys, we're spanning almost 100 and something years, and I love it.
Yeah, again, growing up back then when you had the sporting news and a tremendous amount of information, and you know, the sporting news was bigger than Sports Illustrated back then.
Oh yeah, oh way bigger, yeah. And they had much more stuff.
A big paper version. It wasn't the glossy print pages of the Sports Illustrated. And you got much more in-depth reporting in the sporting news. You got the minor leagues.
Yep, all the minor leagues. Yep.
In that paper, it was fabulous.
Yep. And it was Hockey Digest and Baseball Digest and all those. Yeah, man. But these guys, that's what it's like when I talk with these guys. It's just incredible how much they know, the enthusiasm and the detail. We're going to do that again now with Mike Grenier, and I'm going to have one introductory comment with Mike, and then Mike and Tim are going to chat about it. And it's going to be very interesting coming up, because I think we're about to go to the Boston Celtics wake very soon. And we'll find out about that. We'll be right back. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and Bill Newell.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Right, we're back now with Mike Grenier, sports writer extraordinaire. Mike, how are you doing?
We're doing okay, right?
We are, and Tim and I have been ruminating with Gary about the demise of the Celtics, and I must say, I'm ready to throw the dirt over the coffin.
Well, you know, I'm almost there, because obviously there was more bad news an hour ago, right?
Yep.
Jaylen Brown out for the year with a ligament injury in his wrist. And I think even further bad news, and I don't know if Mr. Larrabee mentioned this, but Robert Williams continues to be a problem in terms of availability. He's got a turf toe injury, and he's definitely out for tomorrow night's game against the Miami Heat. And
all right,
Yes.
How does a basketball player get turf toe?
I was going to ask that.
That's a heck of a... right, I guess, I know, I agree. That's something you'd think that, like, you know, that Devin McCourty would get. Right? Like that. But obviously, it's funny. He's had he's grown a lot this year, Robert Williams, as a player on the court. But the problem is keeping him on the court. He's missed, tomorrow will be his 18th game that he's missed. That's like Joel Embiid numbers, you know? I mean, Embiid has missed 19 games, and he's still in contention for an MVP, and Robert Williams, nowhere near that level, but he's missing a lot of games that are kind of critical to his development. So they're really hanging on by a shoestring at this point, guys, right? They really are. This play-in tournament, trying to make sense of that alone could take you a few days. By the time you figure it out, the Celtics will be out.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
You know, and it's just, you know, the thing that was, to me, the last two games have been important games to them, obviously. They've lost both. And the thing that was most disgusting, I would even say the word disgusting, is the fact they gave up 79 points in the opening half, you know, yesterday. And they've never given up 79 points in a half at the Boston Garden or in a home game. And that just truly kind of brings into focus how bad a defensive team they are.
They had Curtis Rowe and Sidney Wicks 1 year, and they never gave up 79 and a half?
That's right. That's
right.
My. You think of those bad teams. And ML Carr, when he was coaching, had a team that went 15 and 67, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he never had a team that gave up 79 points and a half. And here's even more telling. There's been a three of the last four games they've given up 70 points or more in one half.
Wow.
At the Garden.
Wow.
Including against the Spurs. So that's an indication that they're just totally unfocused and are incapable or just don't want to make the effort on defense. And that's most disturbing because they do have a lot of offensive talent. I mean, when you look at the way they played, Evan Fournier had 30 points yesterday. And I was looking it up. The guy, Evan Fournier, is shooting 45% on threes and 46% overall. 45% on threes put him among the league leaders, you know. So he's doing the job since he came back from COVID-related issues. So, but the defense is just abysmal.
You know, Mike, if you're relying on Eric Fournier to get you 30 points, you're in a lot of trouble.
Well, correct. But now, obviously, Tim, when you look at it, they're going to be desperate for scoring in the playoff situation because Jaylen Brown, they're missing his steady 24.7, 25 points a game this year. Obviously, he made an all-star team. So they're automatically missing that. So they have to start making up for it somewhere. And, you know, it's almost like we're grasping at straws here because they may not even make it out of the play-in tournament. You know, yeah. I mean, you look at tonight. I was watching Russell Westbrook a couple days ago, and that team, the Washington Wizards, they're four games under 500. They've been well below 500 all year. But now they've won like something like 12 of the last 14, and Russell Westbrook is playing off the charts. The game that I watched a couple of days ago, he had 32 points, 19 rebounds, and 15 assists. Or it might have been 15 rebounds and 19 assists. He's putting up absurd numbers. And Bradley Beal, who, you know, is running with Steph Curry right now, is the best scorer in the league, had 50 points in that game. And that would be a team that the Celtics would least like to face in a play-in format, you know. And actually, it could happen because the Celtics right now are ranked seventh. And the Washington Wizards are only half a game out of the eighth spot, and that's who they would face. They would face the Washington. Right now, it would be if they started tomorrow, they would play the Charlotte Hornets in a one-game deal. But if the Washington Wizards win a couple games and the Charlotte loses a game, Washington Wizards will be in the eighth spot, and the Celtics would have to play them. So it's not looking too glorious for the Boston Celtics right now.
You know, it was a season of such promise, but
yes.
I just wanted to see Ainge go out and get a good big man, because that was the team lacked. And some of the moves that he made in getting rid of the bigger personnel that they had and not bringing in a quality big man with some experience. I'll take more defense than offense, but someone to give them underneath presence. That was a glaring weakness that they just couldn't make up all season long.
No, I agree, Tim. I mean, they had Daniel Tice, who was undersized, but they haven't even replaced him. They brought in Mo Wagner for three or four games, and he was a disaster. So they cut him, they waived him. So, you know, the Tristan Thompson's a little older now. He's not nearly as active or as athletic as he was 5 or 6 years ago. So you can't ask him to do the job. And Robert Williams, obviously, his availability is always suspect. So you're right, Tim. They don't really have a legitimate big man that can go in there on a nightly basis and block even, well, Robert Williams is certainly capable of blocking three or four shots a game when he's playing. You just never know when he's going to play. And but Robert Williams is still undersized at 6'8". So you're right. They need a legitimate-sized big man. That has to be a priority in what the offseason may start very soon for them. But you have to wonder, I mean, Tim, are we thinking that Danny Ainge will be back? Are we thinking that Brad Stevens will be back? Because the ownership has to be taking a hard look at that because the team has taken two steps back this year, you know?
Well, you know, Gary is beginning to lead the charge for the dismissal of both Ainge and Stevens at this point.
Yes. Yes, he texted me last night, so I'm not surprised.
has Stevens run his course? And it's such a thing nowadays in all the professional sports. You guys like Bill Belichick and Greg Popovich are such the anomaly. Guys that have been there for an extremely long time.
Yeah.
They've been very successful, and that's why they're still there. And it's sort of, you know, they can weather a down season because they have the credibility because people believe, you know, given one or two key personnel, and they can spin it 180 degrees, where most of these guys that come into the league now can't. They're on real short leashes. The ownership want immediate results. They want to, and one of the problems is I think this is, you know, they want to maximize profit over maximizing fan loyalty.
That's true. You're right. The guys often don't have a chance. But Brad Stevens has had several years now, and he had the team on an upward swing, obviously. And this year they've just fallen backwards in a big way. And you have to at least question what's going on. Are they listening to him? Are they tuning him out? What's going on there?
Let me ask you both a question, Mike, if I can interject here, and Tim.
Of course, yes.
A few years ago, and I don't know, my mind is messed up with history, but not that long ago, there were NBA games where you were scoring 69 points in a game.
Right.
And 20 points or 30 points in a half. Now, that was too far the other way. I agree. But the Boston Celtics trademark in the last, 50, 60 years has always been team play and defense.
Yep.
And with this team, they gave us a hint of it or a tease of it a couple of years ago that they could really play good team defense, you know, with the core that they have, Smart, Brown, and Tatum. Where did that go, and how does that, is it still around in the NBA? Is there defense at all in the NBA?
Well, you know, Rick, that's a great question. I agree with what you're saying about the Celtics. I think individually, some Celtics play defense. We always mention Marcus Smart. He's in that category. Robert Williams would be in that category. Tatum is capable of it, but the problem with Tatum is I think his mind drifts when he's not having a good offensive game. And he just basically forgets about playing defense when he's not having a good offensive game. But you know what? There are still guys who can still get defense out of guys. And you know what? I bring up every Monday, I seem to bring up Tom Thibodeau out of Salem State. They beat the Clippers last night. They're 38-30, and they have a better record than the Lakers. Okay? Mm-hmm. Or actually tied with the Lakers right now. Can you imagine the Knicks, who haven't really been to the playoffs or any kind of championship series they haven't won a championship in 48 years. Here they are, tied record-wise with the Lakers, with a roster that is far less talented than the Celtics or the Lakers. And that's because Thibodeau's teams win games like 101-97.
Okay.
You know, they did it yesterday, as a matter of fact. You know, they win games 103-96, that kind of thing. And to me, that means he's addressing and emphasizing defense. And he knows the offensive talent on his own team, the Knicks, is not that good.
See,
they're going to win games. They're going to win the close games, and they're going to be defensive-oriented games.
I'm going to bring Tim in this because Tim has played basketball and baseball, and you just brought up something that I think it really applies in hockey. But it's the offense. Offense is the thing that gets your name in the paper, you know, in those sports. And the defensive commitment, Tim, as a coach, either in basketball or baseball, that defensive commitment is something. What does it take? Extra discipline, a focus. What does it take? Because I'm not seeing that in the NBA, or certainly with the Celtics. I do see it with the Bruins, and when I talk to high school hockey coaches, that's the biggest thing they have to do, is to teach their kids come back on defense, because it's not that easy to do. And Stevens had that the first year or two. But Tim, what are your thoughts?
One word, Rick, and I think Michael agreed: desire.
Yeah,
you have got to want to play defense. You have got to take pride in stopping your opponent, or preventing a pass, of boxing out, of grabbing a rebound in front of them, of playing strong man-to-man defense. You know, and calling out switches if you're in a zone. I remember, you know, when I went to high school at Dobbs Sadler, and I played under Jim Daugherty, and freshman and JV teams played nothing but man-to-man defense. You didn't learn to play a zone until you get on the varsity. And there was a reason. Because you were going to win games with tight man-to-man defense. And we had a great program. It was incredible. But did we always have the best team? Maybe not. But we had the hardest working team. We had a team that was focused on getting it done. I can tell you that. Because, one, we lived in fear of being yelled at by the coach, but we also took great pride in doing that. And Franny Gill, my baseball mentor, Mike might remember Franny's name, in association with Nipper Clancy from St. Mary's of Lynn Baseball in Post 6.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But Franny always told us, give me 9 guys who want to play, and I'll beat anybody. And that's the problem right now with the Celtics. They don't have enough.
I agree.
Players. They want to play.
Yeah. Right, Rick, and to address that question a little bit, Rick, Tim, and I know what you're saying. Obviously, playing defense on the pro level is a lot more complicated because these offensive-minded teams are so sophisticated in the plays they run, you know, the pick and rolls and the double picks and all these things they set up for guys like Steph Curry. They're hard to defend. However, you have to want to make the commitment to play team defense. By that, I mean you have to know what the defensive principles are, when to switch, who to switch out to, guard the perimeter. I mean, the Celtics game yesterday, when they gave up the 79 points in the first half, there's so many uncontested three-point shots.
Yes, yes.
Because the Celtics do not guard the perimeter very well.
Yep.
They just do not guard the three-point line. And all that takes is some speed and effort. I mean, you'll see, I'm surprised that Marcus Smart has not decked anybody yet. I really am, because, you know, and the other thing, I think we should say this about the Celtics, too, or at least try to bring this up. Who is the real leader on that team?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a leader?
Mm-mm.
I don't think Jason Tatum, he doesn't have the fire to be like a vocal leader. So he's going to play like sort of in the shadows and still be a great player, but he's not a leader. Jaylen Brown, smart guy, he's a good all-around player, but I think he's kind of reluctant to take on a leadership role. Marcus Smart wants to be the leader, and I think if you ask most of the players on the team, they'd probably point to him as the leader. But obviously Marcus Smart is not nearly the player, all-around player, that Jaylen Brown is or Jason Tatum is. So they really don't have a very visible and vocal leader that I can see. And that's been the case. Mm-hmm. With the core being so young, no one's taken up that leadership role. They don't have a veteran like Marcus Morris. Had he stayed with the team, he's now with the Clippers. He might have been a leader at this point. You know, a veteran guy is usually the leader, and they just don't have among these young players someone who's willing to step up and take the leadership role. And I just don't see that on this team.
Good point. Good point. You know, you brought up, you know, Al Horford, I think, could have could have done that if he had stayed. But maddening season to watch these guys.
It's very frustrating
maddening.
Because you know the talent level is there. They have scorers galore. Kemba Walker, we mentioned, you know, Kemba Walker getting later in it, but still he can give you 20-25 points a game. So, you know, the offensive talent is there, but, you know, just the defensive commitment, design, whatever you want to call it, is missing. I also think that because of that, the team chemistry is missing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you wonder if Brad Stevens has lost control, lost his grip on the team, whether they've tuned him out. I mean, he's a nice guy, and I don't know if he can be a bad guy. You can't change your personality in 1 year and be the bad guy in the locker room and calling guys out. That's not who Brad Stevens is. Whereas Thibodeau, when he was in Chicago, had that tough, hard-nosed personality.
But, you know,
he's had a consistent personality when he was with the Celtics as a defensive guru, when he was the head coach of the Chicago Bulls, and now the head coach of the Knicks.
But the other thing is, and this is my final comment, and I'll let Tim finish it up here, is that Brad Stevens brought his college expertise in with young kids, and it worked for a couple of years on the ascending arc. But now it's not. And, you know, what does that mean in terms of a pro coach versus a college coach? I don't know if it means anything, because Thibodeau was both. He certainly has grasped the NBA level and that level with those, you know, millionaire young kids.
And you mentioned Popovich. He's still a great example because he's been around for so long. He dealt with different generations of NBA players. He could be tough with them. I mean, Tim Duncan obviously was the coach's dream, but he could be tough with those teams that won championships, and he's just as tough now with the different, you know, the more entitled generations of players. He's just as tough with them now as he was in the old, quote, old days. It's just that the talent level on the Spurs isn't what it used to be. But he hasn't changed his personality. And I think Brad Stevens can't change his personality, and you wonder if just it just doesn't go well with the current group of players. And I just wonder whether he's reached the end of the line in terms of his effectiveness with a team like this.
Yeah, I would agree, Mike. For coaches like Popovich, he's not going to change. Bill Belichick's not going to change.
No.
It's still Bill's way or the highway. You're going to either want to do it because you're going to come here because you know that way wins, or you can go someplace else where there's not that attitude. And, you can collect a paycheck, but you're not going to go to the playoffs. You're not going to get a chance to make any extra money, and no one's going to know who the hell you are.
Right, that's right. I mean, Belichick is a perfect example. I mean, the fact that he would part, that he was willing to part with Tom Brady, because he thought Brady reached the end of the line.
Yikes.
It shows you that his personality will never change. I mean, obviously, Brady proved him wrong, had a phenomenal year. They won it all. I'm all for Tom Brady. But I also think that obviously Belichick, they don't win six titles without Belichick at the head of the, running the ship, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, Mike, we're going to call it a night, and we'll do it again next Monday. And what your assignment will be for next Monday will be to check us in on some of the other New England players because and the rest of the NBA, because I don't think the Celtics are going very far.
Well, you know what? We could spend an entire hour trying to figure out the play-in form.
Okay.
7 versus 8, 9 versus 10, the loser plays. It's, the MIAA couldn't dream up a more convoluted format than what the NBA is. And LeBron is on record, by the way, as saying that whoever designed this play-in form should be fired.
Okay,
you know,
all right.
You know,
well, you've got,
LeBron's making $60 million a year. He can say that. You know?
You've got your homework cut out for you. All right.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Talk to you later, Mike. Take care. All right. That's
Mike
Grenier, who is sports writer, sports journalist. And Tim, you know what he just said? It reminded me. Do you ever see the movie Patton? Okay, there's a scene where General Bradley gets knocked out of his jeep and he goes into a foxhole without his helmet on or into a berm, and there's a private next to him, and the private says something like, I don't know who thought this stupid ass attack up, but, you know, and he's crazy. And Omar Bradley says, yeah, he ought to be shot. And, of course, it was Bradley who thought it up, you know.
I was going to tell you, if you give the MIAA sufficient time, they could dream something up.
But Tim, you have to admit we've got to give them credit for this year. They and the local ADs and the local school systems have done an amazing job getting these kids to participate.
Oh, they did. No, they definitely did. And again, I tremendous kudos to the kids and the coaches for following along and doing what they have to do.
And we're in the middle of a spring season, and Tim will be out there this week, and I look forward to seeing whatever you come up with, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Coach, any final thoughts here?
just pray that the Celtics in the last remaining games can get the act together and put some kind of semblance of run together. You know, it's going to be tough. There's major people out of the lineup, but again, it's time to step up and be counted for the rest of the guys.
Well, that would be great if it happens. Tim, thank you so much as always, and we're going to be getting back together in studio here very soon, I believe.
Yeah, I'm going to make plans for next week.
All right, and I'll do the same. Thank you, Coach. Be safe. Be well. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Tim. Good night.
Thanks.
All right, that's Tim Kearns, our MSO analyst and our ambassador of goodwill. I'm Rick Moore. As I got to pick up this cord here. Uh-oh. I guess we... We haven't been on the air. We haven't been live because I pulled out the cord. All right, well, we'll put a plug it back in, and we'll get it back on, and there we go. So we'll finish this up, and we'll publish it very soon here. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, and Bill Proposka, I'm Rick Moore. This has been North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com.